Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is indeed time for Parenting with Joanna Fortune. If you've any questions for Joanna, you can send them into afternoon@newstalk.com. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Now, I'm looking for advice on how to manage bedtime with a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. They're girls in our bed every night and have to stay with them until they go to sleep. We've tried talking about moving them back into their bunk beds, but we're stuck as parents. Please help. How can we get the girls to sleep and stay in their own beds? And is this just a phase they will eventually grow out of? How should we handle it?
If I had a really neat answer to this, I think I could retire because sleep is something that's become so pathologized, you know, especially with children and parenting. You know, it's about the sleep routine and this myth that children will stay in their beds all night, every night. And it's just not how kids are built. There's a couple of things, though, in this, like sleep is a prolonged separation. So kids this age struggling to manage a prolonged separation is not something to worry about. The fact that they might need, it's why they always need 50 glasses of water at night and another 10 trips to the toilet. They're just checking. Are you still there? What's happening? It's hard for them. But when this parent writes, we've tried talking about moving them back into their bunk bed, that interests me because it kind of says they were managing in this bunk bed, but something has changed. So I'm not sure how long they've been out of their bunk beds and in the parents' bed, or what's it going on? Because when someone says, is this a phase? I'm kind of going, okay, well, hang on. Are we talking about a phase or are we talking about a practice? Because if you've let this become the norm at home, then it's not a phase. It's a practice that you've also enabled. And listen, that's not with judgment. I do not say that with judgment because I know we'd all do anything for a quick, quiet, get them to sleep night. Whatever gets everyone the most sleep for me is the best way to approach bedtime. But I'm just thinking, if they did they previously do it? What was the trigger for the regression? Was it, you know, sometimes, Sean, a child gets sick. And because they're sick, they're allowed to sleep in their parents' bed just to mind them. And that feels really nice. And it reminds them of how it used to be. And then they're reluctant to go back into their own bed. And you're kind of going, oh, look, we'll just go with it for now. And all of a sudden it's 2-3 weeks in and now you've got something else on your hands. And if one is in, the other's going, well, hang on, I want a
what
bit of that.
Me? Yeah.
So it's entirely possible. Was there a trigger for what you're describing as a regression if they used to do it? And can you, if they did do it previously, just go back to whatever practice you had before the regression? So go back to whatever routine you had that worked. But going back, like, don't expect kids to go, aha, the lovely familiar routine. They're not going to do that. But you have to establish or re-establish, depending on what it is, a calm, clear, consistent routine. And that means persevering with patience. Mm. You know, that you go back to basics on this and you might have 2 rough weeks where you're just trying to get them in their bed and push through it. But if that is your ultimate goal, then that's what you're going to have to do, is to reestablish a routine. I'd still be curious, though, what was the trigger for them getting out of their bed? And has that been addressed? Because if it hasn't, it will find a new expression. It might not be getting out of their bed. It could be something else, but it will find a new behavioral expression. So get to whatever caused the regression, make sure that's resolved, and then go back to what used to work and begin again.
My wonderful grandson just turned 7. When he loses his temper, he goes very quickly from getting annoyed to losing it and lashing out. He has a 3, nearly 4-year-old brother and a 5-month-old one too. He adores them and is incredibly loving with them. He does jujitsu and is known as the strongest boy in the class. He knows he's supposed to keep his jiu-jitsu moves and strength only for the mat. His parents have been called to the school a good few times for incidents where he's lost his temper and lashed out physically. That doesn't happen often. His parents are waiting to be told he needs to get tested for ADHD, which they are loath to do. My daughter-in-law, his mother, has asked me for advice, as I had 4 children, but all I could suggest is maybe trying to have some one-on-one time with him and ask him how he's doing and how he feels about his brothers and the choices he makes when he loses his temper, and what might be a better way to cope, etc. I've never noticed any particularly bad behaviour at home. He plays rough with his brother, but I think that's normal. His parents never shout and are always very calm. He's been brought up naming his feelings and knows when he's angry. He's a great sense of humour and he can use sarcasm in a good way. He gets that from his dad and us. Any advice would be appreciated.
I love that you're claiming sarcasm.
Yeah, okay.
We're so proud.
Everyone claims sarcasm. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, there's a lot in this. Like, first of all, you know, it's great he doesn't lash out physically in school often, but honestly, him doing it once is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because lashing out physically at other children or whatever it might be is something that needs to be responded to in the first instance. But when somebody says, and you often hear this phrase, you know, people go, oh, this person goes from 0 to 90. Mm. But the truth is nobody really goes 0 to 90. To hit 90 that quickly, we're probably simmering at about 60.
Anyway,
you know,
yes,
so
yeah,
there's a bubbling or, you know, what I might call sometimes I work with some kids I might describe as fizzy kids. You know, they're just always a little bit fizzy and it wouldn't take a lot to pop, you know, so we're trying to reduce that. So we all have this thing in our nervous system that's referred to as a window of tolerance, but basically it's a zone of optimal arousal where you feel comfortable, in control, safe and regulated. Above that, you've got a little window where you're not fully out of control, but you're definitely not comfortable. You're getting revved up, a little bit anxious. The fizzing is definitely happening. And then you've got the pop zone, the volcanic eruption. So it's sounding like this little guy is going quite quickly from fizzy to pop, which means blink and you miss it. Because the ideal is that, you know, we would say to parents, the ideal is to catch them on the way up. But if his is like a hop, skip and a jump to flipping his lid, then that's what you're dealing with. So just to kind of put some context that he's going from annoyed to losing it. It may not be annoyed. It may be angry to losing. Do you know what I mean? Annoyed.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Getting annoyed is normal, healthy thing. Sometimes we all need to be a little bit more annoyed, one might argue. But that's there. Now, then this letter moves on to they're waiting to be told he needs to get tested for ADHD, but they're loath to do it. I just want to catch that. Like, I don't know why. Somebody shouldn't be loath to do that. Like, you're not going to get a diagnosis of ADHD if there's no ADHD there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's this is a myth that you all children are getting these diagnoses. That's not true. Mm. And any parent who's been on a waiting list needing it knows how untrue that is. So if somebody, and I'm assuming because it goes from, you know, being called into the school to that line, if the school are saying we're concerned or we would recommend or we suggest, and if you as parents or as a family have a question, might this be something that is in the neurotypical or neurodivergent range, then absolutely go and look at that and get that looked at. And, you know, don't be loath to do it. It's simply a description of how his nervous system and his brain is working. And it's information that could help you help him.
Yeah.
That's all that's going to be. Mm. It's not going to change anything else for him. So don't be afraid of that. Don't be loath. Now, that said, there isn't enough in this letter for me to say you should go and do that, but I'm only getting a snippet.
Yeah.
So if as parents you're going, we don't think that's there, we're not seeing, and you're describing quite a regulated child at home, then you look at what's different when he's not at home. What's happening in school? Is it during playtime? Is it transitions? Is there a pattern to when he is lashing out? Get curious. Rather than being certain it is or isn't something, get curious as to what is going on that is causing him to flip his lid. Because you're talking about a physically strong guy. Now, you're right. The other line here is about rough play with his brother. You think that's normal? Rough play is perfectly normal, but a physically strong 7-year-old, rough housing with a 3-year-old, albeit nearly 4, but 3-year-old, that could be dangerous.
Yeah.
Because they're not at the same developmental level. So that 3-year-old cannot rough play back at the level the 7-year-old can. So I would be very mindful of that and watch that quite closely. Great that he is being brought up in an emotionally fluent environment to express his feelings. Keep doing that by all means. The only thing I'm going to add to this, though, is there's a bit of impulse control stuff going on here that he's quite impulsive in the description here. So you can play with that. There are games and activities like red light, green light, which is simply a stop start. It's exactly what it sounds like. Move when it's green, freeze when it's red. And you can play with that. Big jumps, little hops, tippy toes, different types of movement. So there's a full body piece in that as well. A simple old play yard game like Mother May I. Simon says, they are all impulse control play. Because if we're playing Mother May I tell you to do something, you have to say, may I? And then you have to wait till I say, yes, you may, and do it. Or I might say, no, you may not. And then you have to resist doing it. So it's also cueing you to take your lead from the adult in charge, which is helpful for school as well. Simon says you've got to listen to the person. Did you say it or just am I to do it or not? Mm. Musical statues is another impulse control game. And something like Animal Crossing, where you simply invite him to cross between you across a room, like a stomping elephant or a roaring lion or a floating butterfly or a slither like a snake on his tummy, brings full body movement in, but he still has to take his cue from you, who's directing him how to cross the room. So it's going to help and support the regulation in school. But if this was to escalate or continue, or if it's bigger than maybe the snippet we're getting, don't be afraid of a child going for assessment if it is in their best interests. But as parents, that is their decision to make. A school might advise it or recommend it, but parents ultimately would have to make that decision.
Yeah, of course. Though, when I mean, the grandparent says that the parents have been called into school a good few times.
I know.
So I'd be kind of very worried if I was a parent.
But then the letter says, you know, he lashes out physically. It doesn't happen often. I'm like, well, which is it, a good few times or it's not happening often?
It's almost like they regret they wrote that.
But maybe they're called in about behaviour, but it's not always physical lashing out.
Could,
and that's the
that.
Escalation point, to be fair to the child. But if the school are calling, he's seven, so maybe senior infants, first class, that kind of age, he's really young. Okay, this is a good time to put supports in place. So even without a diagnosis, and this very much depends on the school and what resources they have, to be fair to the school, but if he could access movement breaks, if he could, you know, that's what I mean, is there a pattern to when things are just get, if he's a physically active kid sitting still in school, ADHD or not, even if there's no ADHD, that's going to be difficult. So he might benefit from movement breaks in his school day without a diagnosis.
Yeah. My son is 13. He's a great kid and has really grown into himself in the last year or two. Now that he's a bit older, I've been enjoying introducing him to things that I was passionate about at his age, like music I liked or video games I played a lot. I was really excited when he recently started playing my old Nintendo 64 and got really into it. He was really progressing through one of the games very quickly. But when I asked him how he'd gotten so good so fast, I realised that he was just watching videos of how to complete each part of the game as he got to them and copying that. To me, this completely defeats the point and, more importantly, the fun of the game. This, I learned, was just the tip of the iceberg. He doesn't really have the patience or the attention span to watch a full movie or read a book or try to figure out how to progress in a game. He wants to be shown what to do or find out about the ending of the story before he's read a page or watched the first 5 minutes. I know that it's not for me to impose my idea of fun on him, but I really feel like he's missing out on so much of what makes discovering things fun. How do I convince him to have more patience and be open to delayed gratification? Or should I just stop being a cranky old man and let him do what he likes?
It's kind of two parts to this. I mean, I think it's lovely to share what interested you as a parent with your child. And, you know, he's at that age and the music. And I think all of that's lovely. But it sounds like you gave him the Nintendo 64 you used to like and said, go play with that. And the missed opportunity for connection here is I used to love it. Let's play it together.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been that you're guiding him through the game and, oh, do this bit or that bit. But being left to play it alone, he's like, oh, OK. And then looks up these videos. And again, bear in mind that kids watching videos of other people playing games is an absolute thing.
A huge thing.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. Hugely popular content on social media. So that isn't a strange thing for him to have done. Like he's probably grown up watching unboxing videos and, you know, computer games. So while you're saying it's spoiling the fun, it may be the fun for him. Mm. How quick can you do it, mastering it? Now, that's the first bit of this. I would say play together. And I think that could address some of this because he won't be able to look up the cheat videos anyway if you're right there playing with him. But also, then the second part of this, you learn this is the tip of the iceberg. He doesn't have patience or attention span for a full movie or to read a book. That really kind of made me go, oh, OK, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's gotten away with you not knowing this to 13. So that tells me he's somehow managing whatever cheat sheet version of books or he's doing. He's gotten through school. Yeah. Without anyone going, this kid isn't reading a book. And then I kind of went, well, hang on a second. This is you sharing your interests with him. But what is this kid's interests? Mm. You know, does he really like computer games? Is he just reading books for school? Has he found a book that he's passionate about, a story he's interested in, a series of books? Has that ever been something he's done? Movies aren't for everybody, but, you know, is he into a show that might be 30-minute episodes, not sitting still for 2 hours or whatever it might be? Is there another way to do this? So I wondered how it was affecting his study. I guess he's sixth class or first year, you know, that that's going to become a bigger issue in the next year or two, that if he's not able to read a full book or complete through. Now, I'm not saying he's not able to read, but just to stay with the story or whatever it is, tap into what interests him. And then I was thinking, Sean, as well, that there's something about mastery over tension. Like he's managing to avoid tension moments. You know, he doesn't have to struggle with the game. He doesn't have to wait and see what happens in the book. He goes straight flip to the ending and see how it works out. You know, so there's an avoidance of tension, which means he doesn't get to develop that capacity for mastery over tension rousing experiences, which is helpful in adolescence in general when, you know, there is a natural level of anxiety that pops up. So there's a few games that came to mind that you can do this with. I recently got one that I'm really into at the moment. So that's why it's very front of my mind. And I got mine in Cogs Toys and Games.ie, but Cogs the Brain Shop, but it's called Micro Macro. Okay. And it's this game that comes with a big map. I'm going to really talk to the people in the shop. I'm going to do injustice to how I describe this. But it's like a Where's Wally map. It's like a huge map with loads of tiny things, and you've got clues on cards, and you've to solve a crime. And you've got a magnifying glass, and you've to look in the map for the evidence you're looking for. But, you know, it's more fun to do it together. But there's a whole collaborative piece. You're working on a shared goal. You can't cheat your way through it. You literally have to find the clues and the evidence to work it out.
Yeah.
So he'd have to persevere and stay with it. And it would be for a chunk of time to do it. So a game like that, you could also do Cluedo. And at his age as well, I was thinking Lego sets. You know, if there's something he's interested in, if, for example, he's interested in something like Star Wars or Harry Potter or whatever it is, that you might get a Lego set of one of those things. And there is time that it takes and patience and perseverance one step at a time to build it. All of that could be really helpful to build his capacity to stick with something.
Yeah. Yeah, even if there is a cheat video as how to make the Death Star, you're still going to have to do
it. You still have to do it step by step.
Yeah. My child hates family photos. We baptized my son over the weekend. His older sister threw an almighty tantrum in the church because she didn't want any family photos. She's usually the life and soul of the party, loves getting her picture taken and posing away for videos. But for some reason, she's now taken against any kind of family picture and only wants to be photographed on her own. She's four, and it's really becoming an issue. It was embarrassing in the church, and she kept mentioning how she cried because she didn't want her photo taken, so it has obviously stayed with her. Is this just typical tantrum stuff, or what should I do? We're due to go on family holiday soon, and I don't want this to be a big battle when we want to take some nice family memories to look back on.
Okay, I'm going to start at the end of this letter and work backwards. If the goal is to have a nice family holiday with memories, just go and have your holiday and trust that the memories are in the psyche and they are remembered.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you don't have quote unquote beautiful social media perfect images as evidence of that. You were there, you know it happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so trust that and do not let that ruin your holiday. And then working backwards, like you have to think about how small children are still learning what their emotions are, like especially at the age of four. So then they're also trying to struggle and learn with how do I manage those feelings. And so she may not, you know, sometimes they want something and then they absolutely don't. So take, for example, I like getting my photo taken when it's just me, but not in a group. But what's different there is, I would argue, when you're taking a photo of a four-year-old on their own, it's quite spontaneous. It's with your phone. They're doing something cute or they're in a lovely outfit and you go, oh, let's take a photo. And it's in the moment. Quick, done. There's no posing. There's no smiling. Everyone look here. There's no verbal directives like that. When you're taking a more formal family set of photos, everyone, and especially at a baptism or something, you've got lots of relatives, all with cameras, all looking at you at once, all calling your name, all telling you to look. That's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is actually very understandable to be okay with photo one and not okay with the second set of photos. So I would just empathize with a four-year-old. Don't make this such a big deal. You know what? I also think, Sean, like the best way to get photos of four-year-olds is in action. Standing still, lined up, everyone look this way. That's no fun, or that's not remotely interesting to a four-year-old. But let's all skip together in a line. Let's joke, let's laugh, let's blow bubbles, let's clap, let's play. Action photos will get you your lovely family photos.
Plus also, she has a new brother and suddenly they've hired this big hall and everyone's paying attention to the new brother.
And ooing and eyeing and big demands and requirements. Yeah, I would stick with some action-based photos. I think playing, skipping, running. And it's okay that everyone isn't looking at the camera. You're all there.
Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.